Welcome to Women Are Not Funny, the radio show hell-bent on proving its own premise wrong, with your host, the very funny, stupidly talented, Paula Kelly. Listen in as Paula and her fabulous female guests skewer, jab, jive, and variously misbehave in a heroic attempt to demonstrate the truth about the way women use humor in their daily lives and professional careers. And now, your host of Women Are Not Funny, Paula Kelly.
Well, hello. This is Paula Kelly, but that's a slight bit of misinformation, isn't it?
Paula Kelly, why, you know, it is my turn to be host. Just sit back and let me say my piece. Hi, I'm Kay Ballard, and I want to welcome you to Women Are Not Funny. This is the first show of our relaunch, our second attempt to disprove the premise that women are not funny. And what you've just heard was not our theme song. It was an oldie, but more about that later. But I guess it's okay because actually our guest on this first show of the second iteration is none other than the former host, my good friend, Paula Kelly. How are you?
I'm doing well, Kay. Thank you. Yourself?
Well, I'm doing well, too, and I'm real excited about today because I thought what we would do is explain to our loyal listeners, and, you know, we're talking about millions of people, actually, aren't we?
Of course.
Our vast audience. I thought we would explain to them, you know, some of the things that we learned from our first attempt at Women Are Not Funny. And I also know that you have so many friends who really would like to get to know you a little better. So those are my two goals for today, to talk about our little endeavor and also to talk about you.
There's nothing I like talking about more.
And why not? Now, as you know, one of the things that we agreed upon is that we would attempt to do a show that would not be cringeworthy for our mothers. Because both of us, let's admit it, both of us have mothers.
Oh, that's for sure.
And so we thought we would do a mother-friendly broadcast. And if we can pull that one off, Paula, if you can pull that one off, you're going to get little stars in your crown.
From you, not from my mother. I'll have you know, audience, this is Kay's idea.
Okay. Well, at any rate, here's the first thing I think we ought to talk about. We were partners in an endeavor, and it just didn't go right, did it? It kind of went wrong, and yet we are still friends. How did that work?
That's right. It wasn't the fact that I don't think it was us that didn't work together. It was just, well, Kay and I have both been known to have or harbor or harvest delusions of grandeur. And I don't think that's a bad thing per se, you know, aim high, all of that. Sometimes, though, these things fall through. Failure is not a bad thing. Failure just, it's a good way of learning what you have to do next time. So we learned. It was a great learning experience. And this, what we're doing now is a manifestation of what we learned last time.
Well, one of my favorite lines, and I think it's hilarious, and I use it often, and one of the things I've noticed is no one else thinks it's hilarious in the least, okay, is that the internet is one place where failure is viewed as progress. But, you know, that is my one thing.
Give me an example of that. Oh, what I just said. Yes.
What you just said. What you just said would be a perfect example.
I think that's true in other aspects of life, though. I mean, I don't think that quotation is funny because I think it's true. I mean, some things are funny because they're true, but I just think that's a truism.
Yeah, well, it would still make me feel better if I could. Not only do I not get a chuckle out of it, I don't even get a smile. And to me,
how do
you
know that I'm not smiling?
Well, I can tell, Paula. I actually know you that well. So,
I'm beaming.
One of the things that we did, and I like your explanation that the two of us have visions of grandeur, because we think we can do anything, don't we?
Yeah.
You know, pretty much. But one of the things that we did that should have made things go right on our first rendition of Women Are Not Funny is we pulled in some very high-priced talent, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
It was rather amazing. We had the fabulous DJ Angie C. We had Kay Hanley, who is, you know, she's on the Twitter celebrity list even. She is a very well-known indie singer and quite talented both in musically and very funny. And we had comedian Tammy Jo Dearen, who is headlining in some really big shows with big names there in L.A. We also had Kathy Neff and Nancy Tierney. And we just had some amazing people as roundtable participants. And we didn't really pull it off, though.
I wouldn't say that. We pulled it off in that. We got on the air. We did a show. It happened. It did not happen.
Well, one of the things that was really kind of interesting is after we went to a panel with you big Hollywood types, it got kind of insidery. You know, you guys fly high and you're in these Hollywood circles and it just kind of you're showbiz all the way.
We did get a little bit in-jokey, it's true, and subject matter that may seem, trivial to some.
Not at all. Not at all. I think it's more of a case, Paula, my dear, that the rest of us were envious. You know, I mean, I lead a very glamorous life. Everyone knows I lead a glamorous life, but not everyone does. And it was, you know, so it's a little bit above the fray. Now, one of the amusing stories that came out of that topical section that we tried to do that I still laugh at is when there was a discussion mainly between Kay Hanley and Tammy Jo Dearen about crow funerals.
Yes, I recall.
Every time I think about crow funerals, I know you're probably supposed to weep. I know that's probably the more appropriate reaction, but I just kind of burst out laughing.
I'm laughing too on the inside. Crow funerals, scientifically, I think that's fascinating.
Well, it is fascinating. And, you know, and that really, it's things like that brought us the millions of listeners. You know, the possibility of hearing something as amusing as crow funerals. Now, one of the things when you and I first started, when this first little germ of an idea came to us, we decided that an important thing for us to do was to have a vendetta against insipid female laughter.
That is correct. Insipid, people-pleasing laughter.
A
thing that females feel they have to do rather than face the awkward silence, which isn't always awkward, but men don't really do that, especially in business. If there's, you know, a lull, women will just be like, so, ha, 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 ha.
Mm. I agree. But we started mm-hmm. this thing with kind of a disagreement because I wanted to refer to it as insipid female laughter and you wanted to refer to it as people-pleasing laughter. And apparently we still haven't even settled that.
Ah, would you like to argue about that?
No, not really. But I do want to point out that probably during the course of our several editions of Women Are Not Funny Radio, you and I were the most guilty of the insipid female laughter of
no.
anyone.
No.
Well, we did a bit, darling. We did a bit.
Do you have examples?
No, I guess I'll have to go out and go back and, you know, get recorded clips and so forth.
Yeah, have
and,
fun with that.
Yeah, and perhaps you would take me to court, but remember, only one of us is a lawyer. But even if we didn't do insipid female laughter, don't you think we talked over each other like crazy?
Definitely.
And that is... Yeah.
Mm. I'm not talking over you. Oh, miles, you're sealed. Go for it, baby.
That is one of the most difficult things to learn how to do, is not to talk over someone. We're not even sitting in the same room. We're literally hundreds of miles away from each other.
Thank God.
See, you do still resent me, don't you? You resent me because now I am the host and you are no longer the host.
It's a love and resent, like family.
Well, that's true. But, you know, let's make it very clear that this was not a case where, I mean, you are the one who resigned. You actually resigned. You
mm-hmm.
said, Kay, I just simply cannot take you anymore. It's the words to that effect.
Yeah, I said. well, yeah, that's what I said. Can't work with you. Take this job and shove it.
Well, exactly. And then
for double the salary.
Right. When I offered to double the salary, it just had no effect on you at all.
Little did you know I was a math genius.
Well, one thing about it, though, is I don't think either one of us can claim to be math geniuses, even though obviously you're much smarter than I am. But, you know, we have referred to our practice in our private conversations. We've referred to what we do as throwing $100 bills in the fireplace. And that is either a matter of us being very bad at math or just having too high of an opinion about our own ability to crack the jokes.
I don't think it's a matter of us being bad at math or finance. This happens all the time, not only with you, but with certain friends of mine who happen to be gifted in the matter of funny, will be on the phone cracking jokes or, like, on the IM and just, like, riffing, and it's hilarious, and we're like, oh, my God, we should be getting paid for this. This is gold. This is comedic gold. And then... But, of course, you never get in front of an audience and do it. It's just, why? I don't know. Doing stand-up comedy is frightening. I've never done it, but I imagine it's frightening. I've, you know, all through college, I was terrified of standing up just in front of a class and giving, you know, an oral report. And then, I expect this question. But you get in front of a stage and perform in front of thousands of people with my music. Totally different. You get in front of a camera and act in the totally different. Totally different. You're a public speaker. I mean, that's that too is different.
Yeah. Let me tell you though, I have two comments to make about that. One is the $100 bill on the fireplace. One of the fun things and also frustrating about what you're talking about is when we're sitting around and just amusing each other, yes, that humor is very disposable. You know, it goes away, it goes into the vapor, never to be heard again. But I am a person who loves extravagance. So there's something about mm-hmm. the extravagance of that that just appeals to me. You know, it's the
yes.
wastefulness of it, the very wastefulness of it makes it just...
But is it wastefulness or is it just living in the moment? It's like chalk art. You make this beautiful chalk drawing or a chalk mural, and you know the second it rains, it's going to go away.
Yeah, no, I don't really mean wastefulness. I really mean more like waste. You know, the ability to just be so extravagant and wasted. And but the other thing I would say is, in my own speaking career, when I do keynote speeches, it is very much like stand up. And I will tell you, how it's different is my audiences, if they are drunk, I don't, you know, they hide it very well. So I don't, you know, I'm not in front of an audience of inebriated people generally. So that's one thing that kind of makes it better. Fewer hecklers that way. And then also, since what I do is very much like stand-up, but it's all material, you know, my speeches are not just recitations of what I've said before, but a lot of my material, I have tested it out on people. So it's a, you know, it's a matter of timing. I know what things people are going to find funny. And so, you know, in that respect, I'm not taking much of a chance because I know even though every audience is different and, you know, I speak nationally, so the audiences are in different regions and so forth, and what people find funny and what they find interesting can vary. But it's really not, you know, I don't really find it very scary. And you know from your own experience as a musician in front of a live audience that what I'm saying is true. Every audience is different, and there's a communication that goes back and forth, and that's what makes it fun and dynamic. And mm-hmm. so I can very much see you doing stand-up comedy. And it's something, as you know, I've given you some encouragement on.
You have, but I do think that video is my medium. If I'm not going to have a guitar or a piano in front of me.
Well, we agree that the camera loves you, and part of the reason is you seduce it. You just flat out seduce it.
See, think I'm a camera slut. I don't mean to seduce it.
Yeah, you may not mean to, but I do know that that is exactly what is going on. And it, you know, it
I'm a
works.
Natural slut. I'm a natural camera slut.
Well, exactly.
It's my natural love for plastics.
And I don't see anything, you know, wrong with that. But I want to go back, Paula, just for a moment to the first Women Are Not Funny radio. One of the things that I wondered about is when we were doing the show, were you always wearing earrings?
No.
That might have been...
More often than not, I don't wear earrings.
Okay.
Why?
Well, this is... it's just the theory. I have nothing to back it up, but we are women, and, you know, wearing earrings sometimes, I think, is just called for, you know. I don't know, but don't worry about it. I'm not trying to make you feel...
I have something to say about that.
Okay.
What is... my mother freaked out. That's two syllables, freaked, when I told her I didn't really care to wear weddings at my earring. Earrings at my wedding! Because if I told her I didn't want to wear weddings at my earring, I don't blame her for freaking out. But I don't normally wear earrings, especially at that time I didn't because my hair was longer. I do occasionally now, but and she was like, you have to wear earrings! You have to wear earrings! You have to wear earrings! And I'm like, why? I never do. It's not me. That is your wedding. That's right. It's my wedding, not your wedding. She was so, like, she took on this whole other persona, the mother of the bride. Why does she care so much whether I wear earrings? And now you're giving me this thing. It's like what women do. What is it about earrings, Kay Ballard?
Paula, I'm not trying to induce guilt. I'm truly not. I just bring it up.
I'm not feeling. I'm asking a question. Tell me.
Yeah, just all I want from you is to just give it some thought. The other thing I wanted to mention is
you're moving
that,
on already?
What?
Moving on from earrings already?
We are moving on because I really, you know, I think you need to, I just think you need to give it some thought. You know, I'm just raising possibilities, Paula. That is my job. That is my job. I'm really not making a statement. I'm just raising the issue. Okay, so the other thing that we did that we thought was so brilliant and so cute is that we invited men we knew to be candidates to be the Women Are Not Funny token males. And we invited some great guys. But the first two guys we invited didn't even show up.
True.
You know, that was really sad. And then we had three who did, Dave Saunders, Linus Dodson, and Scott Oliver. And, you know, our executive, and this was the segment that I participated in, and our executive producer and my business partner, Kamala Spurley, really grouched at me because I never let the men talk.
I mean, it was your job or our job to completely guide the line of questioning, and it wasn't really about what the men had to say. The whole point of the token male isn't the man's voice, just as the token female. I mean, the token female in history, it's not about what the woman had to say. It was just, you know, okay, we got to have a female on the board. All right, who's cute? Her, yeah, put Bonnie on there, whatever.
Paula, exactly. We were just looking for a good-looking, kind of virile, manly sort of guy.
Kind of virile, yeah.
Yeah, and to be our token male, and we really didn't care what they had to say, did we?
No.
And it would be
that was rude. We would like humor them into thinking we did, but we never did.
Well, and the thing is, it would have been disingenuous if we had just let them talk a lot because we really weren't that interested in what they had to say. So I think we did, you know, I think we did all right there. We also had some wonderful guests that you interviewed, and they were, you know, charming and very interesting, and you did a great job of that. So, you know, one of the things that we found out, though, in the course of doing this, that doing a weekly show, it just pounds you, doesn't it?
Oh, it really does. I used to put on, when I lived in Boston, I put on a monthly show, a live show at a club in Cambridge once a month, four different bands. I would be in one, and it was a thematic thing, a different theme every month. One was Tiki Tuesday. It was every Tuesday. One was, last Tuesday of the month, Tiki Tuesday, World War Tuesday, Movie Tuesday. I was like, I couldn't get my act together. It was impossible. And now we're talking every week. I mean, boom, 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 boom. It really, it creeps right up on you.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a lot of work.
What we would do is we'd finish on a Friday. We'd kind of breathe easier and go, we have the weekend. And then we had to just turn right around. And there was so much going back and forth, which was fun for me, but one of the problems that we had with this is that you, my friend, have so many fun and exciting things going on in your career. And for people who do not know, in addition to being quite the comedian, Paula is a very accomplished musician with a lot of very impressive credits in her career. Now, currently what's going on with her is that she recently starred in a movie, a feature film, and not only did she star in it, she did the musical score for it, and it is an indie movie that's going to be shown at festivals all over during this first half of 2010. So, Paula, tell us about that a little bit.
Okay, the movie is called Smoked. Smoked, colon, the chaotic reality. And it's a mockumentary about a reality series. It's a feature-length film. This is the first feature film I have done the original score for, and it's also the first feature film I have acted in. I've had songs and features before, but it's the first one that I've, you know, been in charge of the music for. So that was a real, real boon for me. And it was so much fun. Like, I'm envisioning actors being interviewed on the Letterman chair or the Conan chair. I'm like, oh, the cast was so wonderful. But this really was a great ensemble cast, and I've never done this before. The whole thing was comedic improv. And, you know, I can't say, you know, for what we were talking about, you know, before we were actually working, but once the director said action, everyone was just spot on, so amazing, and so, like, you know, there's kind of an unwritten rule, maybe it's written, I don't know, but in improv, you don't tend to sort of work against each other. Somebody will say something, and you just go with it. And that makes it so much more fun and just hysterical. And so the acting part of it was great. The music part, a lot of work, but I loved it. This is the thing, like, when people say when you're doing what you love, it doesn't feel like work. And that is so true. I mean, sometimes I hear people say, oh, this person's lazy, oh, they're afraid of hard work, blah, 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 blah. People are only, like, loath to do hard work when they're not doing what they love. I I'd complain, like, I was up till 4 in the morning and I had to get up at 9 to go deliver this thing. I mean, because I'm sleep deprived, that's a different issue. But, like, I just work on this thing and, because I love to do it. I love it. And then when it came to down to the wire, the director, Mario Colello, was like, all right, Paula, we have enough music for this thing. And I'm like, wait, but I got more. Let me just send you one more thing. And he's like, okay, but we're done. I'm like, just okay, but if we weren't done, I would have put this here just so you know. You don't have to use it, just so you know. So I was so excited about the whole thing. It was great.
Well,
yeah.
I guess so.
Go ahead.
It's going to come out on DVD, but in the meantime, people can find it on YouTube, find clips of it. And I think if they go there and see it, if they know you at all, they will be like I was. I kept looking at it going, is that really Paula? Because that is what was so impressive. You truly are an actress. You created a character. And
yeah.
I was very convinced that you were this kind of frumpy blonde mother of four, not Paula Kelly.
Five and a half.
Oh, five and a half, mother of five and a half. Anyway, you were very, very, very funny in the clips that I saw, and I can't wait to see the whole movie. But, I mean, the excitement never stops. As I understand it, tonight you're actually going to go to a screening of an animation that you've done the music for.
That's right. And this is one of those, this is a testament to, like, no matter, these things happen, I mean, in Los Angeles, they probably happen everywhere, but, like, when I first moved out here, I was the music director for a theater production. It was this crazy seat of the pants, 6 week working with three different playwrights. It was a serial production. It was different every week. It was crazy. Some people got their scripts in on time. Most people didn't, but I loved it. And I really like working by the seat of my pants. I just, you know, improv is something I love doing. And this is like 4 years later, I get a call from a couple of the people who did one of the serial plays, and a Disney animator has worked with this playwright, Patricia Scanlon, and Dan Lund is the Disney animator. They worked on this character called Hildy, who is just, Patricia's a brilliant writer, Dan's a great animator, and they made this animated series called Hildy Hildy, and the whole time they've had my music in mind to use for it. And they contacted me when I was on vacation, like Christmas, over the holidays, my parents' house, totally sick with, like, the Black Plague. And I just heard from them, and they're like, guess what's happening, blah, 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 blah. And they're going to use my song in this thing. Well, they asked permission, of course, and I'm like, yes. So tonight I'm going to go to the screening of this, and I'm just never burn bridges is what I'm saying, because you never know, it could happen. And this was just like, I mean, I've been working really hard, and work was like so bad at the end of 2009, and then the beginning of this year things started to happen. And it's almost like you just throw things out there, and you never know what's going to come back at you. Even if you throw random things out there, things from years ago could come back. It's just, it's bizarre, but it's great. So.
Well, that's definitely true. You know, one of the things that I wanted to try to do today is, and it's really a big job, I wanted to see if we could try to figure you out. Because you really, let's face it, you are an intriguing person. And what I have in mind is nothing like the Proust questionnaire, but I do want to ask a few questions. And these are questions that do not require a yes or no answer. They require something of an explanation. I want to know, you know, I do know that you come from a musical family, but when did you know that you also had musical talent? How did you discover that, and how did that come about?
This is interesting because if we can figure me out, that would help me out a lot. and I do come from a musical family, but not one of those musical families where, like, my dad was the same as this and my mom was the same as that and my siblings are all blah, blah, blah. Like, it's a famous musical hobbyist family, kind of, except for me. So there's that. Anyway, okay, when did I know I was cut out to be a musician? Is that the question?
Right. Yeah, that's really a better way to ask the question. When did you know that you had some serious talent going for you?
Well, it's hard to say when I knew I had serious talent. I knew at a really young age, like before I could reach the piano, I knew I had to get up there. But when you're three, you don't really understand that there are things like talents or there are things like musical gifts. But I knew I had this determination. Yes?
I have to interrupt and tell you this. When I was a tiny child, I was fascinated by pianos. And so everywhere that my parents took me that there was a piano, I was immediately drawn to it. I would go to it and, you know, they would sit me on the bench and I would try to play. And so my parents assumed that I had a great future ahead of me as a musician. They immediately bought a piano when I was a very tiny little girl, and I had 8 years of piano lessons. It was, you know, it was all wrong. So, I mean, here's this exact same phenomenon going on, but with me, there was nothing to it.
All right, so that's not the answer. Okay, so you knew you had to play it, I knew I had to play it. Okay, so that when I knew I had talent then is when I started taking lessons, and when I was 6 or 7 years old, I was playing the same compositions that the junior high kids were playing.
Wow.
Yeah. And I knew I had a good ear because, and my teacher knew this, and she was trying to force me to learn theory because I knew I could get away with playing the song without learning theory. You know, usually what happens when you're learning a new song is the teacher will play it for you first. Like, do you like this piece? You know, yes or no. Would you like to learn this, yes or no? And do you like this one? And I'm like, oh, yeah, could you just play that again? And I would, like, get it in my head, and I'd learn to play it by ear and sort of not get away with having to learn the music theory because I would just, like, remember what she played and bang it out by ear. I knew that was a gift, and I knew that I could get away with a lot. But now that I've become an orchestrator and a composer, and I have to play for gifted musicians who are gifted in performance and they read charts. They read charts that I have to write. It bit me in the rear, and I had to go back and learn theory eventually. So, but I learned a lot of piano on ear. I picked up guitar in high school by ear. I knew I stood out from the pack when I was, I guess, old enough to be cognizant.
So how old would that be?
6, 7, 8.
Wow.
But when I got to school, it was something that the kids were teasing me for. I mean, you know, the piano star who is a couple years older than me, you know, she'd hear me play, and then I would, it's funny, you know, bullies would get teased for being dorks. I mean, yeah, like the piano prodigy is a dork, of course, but it wouldn't be like you get nailed in the corner and, like, give me your lunch money. I would get nailed in the corner and be like, okay, play the sonata, you know, nailed with, like, the bigger bully and her friend, and I'd play the sonata, and I'd play it perfectly, and they're like, it was too fast. Yeah, it was too fast. Get out of here. So it's funny, but it was really traumatizing because the thing that I excelled at, I was made fun of for. So I like.
I'm sorry. That is a hilarious story. Being bullied by the would-be sonata players who resented your ability to play the sonata. You know,
yep.
I can so relate to your experience, but in the opposite, because when I was in junior high, I could play as well as the 6 or 7 year olds, and I could play the pieces they could play. And I'm also, though, a little bit disappointed because I was kind of a mean girl, but it never occurred to me to be, to bully the better musicians. That I just left that out of my life experience.
You should have
and I
done
suppose
that.
I know
it
there's
works.
No going. There's
I have
no
a
going
complex.
Back.
I mean, I had a complex. I mean, shit. I sailed that ship. My ship has sailed.
Yeah. Well, that's now here's my next question. And I want to mention that we've told this story before on an earlier edition of Women Are Not Funny, but the way you and I actually met is you and I were in a comedy competition, and you beat me. And that's how I met you. You know, I noticed, of course, when you won and I didn't. And what I offered up was really the best I could do. You know, I mean, there was no, it was just my very best effort. And, of course, I thought my answer was much funnier than yours. Apparently, I was wrong. But instead of resenting you, I should have resented you and bullied you. But instead, what I did was I followed you on Twitter, and you ignored me for months. You just totally ignored me.
See, I didn't realize that there was a thing that told me who my new followers were. I didn't decide to ignore. I was like, hey, Ballard, I'm not following her. I just was ignorant.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
I shouldn't have admitted that to you.
I think the claim of ignorance is something I prefer to hear, but, you know, it sounds way better to me than I just didn't like you or you just looked like someone unworthy. But regardless, I kept pestering you until you paid attention to me and started following me, and then we became friends. I mean, I think. But here's what I want to know. So you're the woman who not only bests me at music, but also bested me at humor. When did you know you were funny? When did you have a sense of yourself as a funny girl?
This is interesting, too, because this goes way back. Again, when I was young, like 6 or 7, is when I started, once my family irritants moved out of the house, maybe I was 8, I don't know, I felt freer to be myself. I loved, you know, dressing up, costume, jewelry, whatever. I had a little friend. She and I would put on plays. One of my brothers had a girlfriend, and she was really creative, and she'd like to help us. And, you know, I'd write songs, and my friend and I would sing them. This friend recently moved to L.A., and she's actually in a really great stage show now. Like, she went the theater route, and I went the, you know, film composer route, and or before that, the pop rock band route. But it's really cool that we reunited. And then, but this was in the summer. Like, she was my little buddy in the summer. We would ride horses together, and then we'd hang out together and put on these little home productions. And my dad would film them all on Super 8. And now we have, like, closets and closets full of Super 8 film that will eventually get transferred to DVD, whoever wants to take on that project. But at school, I was a total dork because I was smart, and I was an ostracized musician. So, I, you know, forget about me being popular, not even a chance. So I had, but I had my two little dorky friends. And with them, I was like, I was funny. I made them laugh. And I made my friend, my friend Dinah, I made her, like, we amused each other. So I knew I had something going on, you know, why I wasn't popular or whatever. That's not what I was cracked up to be. But I knew there was something there. So.
Well, it's one of the things that you've talked about before and we've talked about before, and there's actually been a good bit written about it. And yet there are still people who do not understand. Is that many times for women, you have to choose. You can't be smart and pretty. You can't be smart and popular. You can't be funny and pretty. And, you know, there was one period of time back when some of us were around when you couldn't be athletic and be considered feminine.
Right.
Whereas now, if you're a woman and you're not athletic, you're pretty much considered a loser. So that's one thing that has changed. But it is really, really difficult in some cases for some men, and we can't indict all men, but it really is difficult for some men to accept women who are funny. And, you know, I told the story about a boyfriend who broke up with me because he said I was funnier than he was, and he just couldn't handle it. And, you know, I don't
props
know if that's...
For admi- yeah.
What?
Props for admitting it, but lame.
Yeah, well, it's either props for admitting it or he was just really smart to think of a way that would, to break up with me that would make me happy or something. But anyway, I think that your description of you as a dork, an unpopular dork, is really hard for me to believe because you are certainly, you're still a dork, but my goodness, you're very popular. Now, Paula, you have a name in addition to Paula Kelly, and that is Divine. And I would just love to hear the story about how that came about.
The name is not divine. It's the divine PK. It's all one thing, the divine PK. It's not just divine. Although, you know, those who are close to me can refer to me as divine, hey, like a nickname for a nickname, a nickname, a double nickname, if you will. But the divine PK, it happened. It's another thing that I made a detriment. I took a detriment and made it into a deification, pretty much. When I graduated college and became part of the Boston music scene, I started a band called Boy Wonder, and this is jumping a lot of years, a lot of stories anyway, but, you know, got my own apartment, got my own band. People who had been around there for a while, you know how the new chick always gets treated or often gets treated, but not only was I the new chick, I was the new chick who was the leader, the front person of her own band, the one who wrote her own songs, the one who played lead guitar. So I wasn't just, I don't know. Some people see that as a threat. Usually it's like, or then it was the men who would write the songs, and most of their girlfriends were kind of band groupies or band fans. And so I became friends with a lot of guys in bands. The guys who populated my band were often... the guys who populated my bands were often male. But, you know, I auditioned a couple of women. Sometimes, you know, there was a passing girl or two, but mostly there was dudes, and I had more in common with them. And, you know, my boyfriends would be guys in other bands, but, like, I tended to be an object of detestment to band guys' girlfriends. So with that, but, you know, the people who liked my band would like me. I mean, some girls are cool and don't mind. They don't feel competitive with me. Guys, whatever, like, you know, you don't get male groupies where you get female groupies. Maybe it's the whole thing where, you know, that hackneyed thing where women are taught that you just want to get married and have kids and that's your thing, go get a man. Like, guys, there's a whole weird kind of guy groupie thing. I don't want to get into how weird that is, but it's different. It's different. Anyway, I learned of this sort of segment of the Boston band population, these girls who would refer to me as, oh, the divine one, because they thought that I was quite shy. I didn't have a lot to say to these people because, you know, I talk more to the guys because we talk about gear, guitars, boring stuff. I didn't have a lot to say to the girls because we didn't have as much in common. They took it for snobbiness, which happens all the time. I didn't think I was better than them. In fact, I had a complex still because I got beat up because I played that freaking sonata too fast. but, you know, I took care of the way I dressed. I did my hair. I put on these outfits. You know, I'm like, I'm up to entertain people. I'm going to look entertaining. And I wrote these really tight arrangements for my songs. I mean, I didn't do it halfway. So they're like, oh, the divine PK, where's the divine one, blah, 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 for years. Okay, so after all that was done, I became really good friends with one of these women. And she divulged to me this whole story of how they used to call me the divine PK. And I had no idea they actually cared that much to give me a moniker. and one that was so, like, that's a juicy one, the Divine PK. And I thought it was just too great to just let slip by. So I decided to adopt it and use it. And it stuck. I embraced it. I owned that. I'm owning that one, baby.
It is, well, it is so, it is so funny. And you are a couple of things that I know, and I don't think you will be embarrassed for me to divulge them, but you are very smart, and you are a member of Mensa, by golly. You love words. You love words.
I do.
In fact, I said one time, this is, I'm going to quote myself. I said this at the social media soiree about you. She knows words. She makes up words. She even says words. And I think that is a very apt description of you, because you are fascinated by words and you really manufacture your own words all the time. In fact, this very last week, I had the very unpleasant experience of inspiring one of your words, which was ignoridium.
Ignoridium, yes.
And you want to explain what that means?
Absolutely, yes. One non-word that is rampant in in colloquial American speak is nother, as in a whole nother. What is nother? It's not a word.
Right. And I said it, and when I said it and when I defended myself, I said, well, it's just an idiom. And you said it's an ignoridium.
Yes. Why don't you say a whole different thing or another thing, a whole nother? Oh, never. No, no, it doesn't exist. I made up a song here, but it's always amused me. Like, I don't detest it. I just think that one's funny. Some things I do detest, like using an apostrophe for plurals. Oh, that gets my goat. But, like, whole nother, you know. But ignoridium, yeah. Nother. Nother.
Yeah.
No. No.
You know what? I feel almost like you felt when the two women bullied you about the sonata. You know, I used an ignorant idiom. You coined a word, ignoridium. Now, one thing about it, though, you are not totally mean, because you immediately tweeted about it, but you did not refer to me.
I didn't. Could have. Didn't. Well, you weren't being mean to me that day. Maybe on another day I would have. If you had been, you know, chastising me for something earlier, I might have let it slip.
Well, possibly. Because, you know, I wouldn't think it would be beneath you to be mean on occasion.
Certainly,
you know,
not.
Yeah.
Especially
the thing
when
is, though,
pushed.
Regardless of how you are, whether you're mean or when you're in a generous mood, when you're smart alecky, when you're being profane, I'm just crazy about you. And so here's my question. You resigned, and I took it in good stead when you resigned as host of Women Are Not Funny Radio. You know, I was sad initially. There were probably, I don't know, 30 gallons of tears shed. But after I got over it, I got in some practice in swimming. There was just a huge, huge puddle. I swam in the puddle of tears. And then I got out and I dried off and, you know, tried to think of another way to go with this, because I'm very interested still in exploring the concept. So here's what we came up with. Well, the first thing is there was someone else I wanted as host. And for a while, it looked like she was going to bite, you know.
Mm.
But she just got, you know, her intelligence got the best of her, and she decided against it. But what we have now is a very different format. We're going to have a show every Friday, but there's going to be a featured guest, and the conversation with that featured guest about humor and about the role that humor plays in her life and in her career. There are several people who I just find so much fun to talk to and who have a lot to say and who are friends of mine and who have agreed to be regular featured guests. One of them is my mortal enemy, and I do hate her, and I seriously mean this, and that is best-selling author Patty Dye. I hate her. I even have a blog with its own enemy tab just dedicated to her. She is going to be a regular featured guest. Another regular featured guest is Master Coach Michelle Woodward, who is very, very funny, has written a book that essentially deals with everything. She has had a very high-level career as a lobbyist in Washington, D.C., and she's fascinating to talk to. Then we have Melissa Pierce, who's kind of the go-to girl in social media. She is really a very well-known person for this fabulous film. She's done a documentary that's about to come out called My Life in Perpetual Beta. I think it's going to be debuting at South by Southwest. And she also is a member of Mensa, you know, all of these intelligent women. Yes, she is. You have that in common. And she, as a matter of fact, is next week's guest, but she is also one of our regular featured guests. And then we have Addie Binge, who is just a very bright young woman who is doing something that many of us did a long time ago, and that's going through her first year of college. She's at the University of Rhode Island, and she is a freshman. She is someone very interesting to talk to, and I'm certain I'm not prejudiced by the fact that she is my niece. That couldn't possibly be, you know, my high opinion of her couldn't possibly be influenced by that. So here's my question for you, Paula. You know, you were host of this show, and you walked away from what many would consider just the most prestigious gig in showbiz. You just walked away from it and left it with me. And I'm glad. You know, frankly, I'm glad because I've been thinking it over, and I pretty much deserve the star treatment. So as executive producer of this show, I'm going to give myself the star treatment that I deserve. I'm determined. But what I wondered is if you might relent just a teeny tiny bit and continue to be involved with Women Are Not Funny by being one of our featured, regular featured guests. All right, just a minute. We don't have, you know, I know this won't sound too musical because I'm just not, but dun, 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 dun. That's, you know, like the Jeopardy.
Yes. Will you triple my salary?
Will I triple your salary?
Yes.
That's the kind of decision that I'm really not authorized to make. But what I'll do is I'll go out on a limb. I'll go out on a limb and do it. I'll triple your salary. Don't tell the others. Please do not tell the others.
I won't. I will not tell, you know, Melissa Pierce and Michelle Woodward and all those wonderful women that you're tripling my salary.
Yeah, please do not let them know.
My lips are sealed.
I mean, particularly not Patty Dye. She's already,
definitely,
you know,
not.
She's hard to deal with. She is,
She's really stupid.
Well, I think
so.
Anything. And she's the scourge of my life, really, most of the time.
I know. Doesn't know a damn thing.
But you're going to do it?
Are you going to have a moderator on those shows when she's on there?
Oh, listen. The thing about it is, Patty is a handful, but Paula, you know me. I'm a very capable woman. I can handle Patty Dye. I can handle Patty Dye. So do I get it right? Have you agreed then to be a regular featured guest?
Will you marry me?
What?
Will you marry me?
Paula, I'm just going to take that as a yes, and you are a regular featured guest on this program. And, you know, some things,
if
there are some kind of...
no, then yes. Yes! Yes!
Wonderful. because I think it's a punishment that you truly deserve. And I hope anyone listening will be with us next week, because Melissa Pierce will be our guest. And I think we're going to have a very interesting conversation. We're going to talk about social media successes and failures in relationship building. And we're going to tell some of our own stories. And some of them are funny, some of them are less so. If anyone who is listening has a story of your own to tell, you'll find information about how to contact me, how to email me on the contact page in the on the website. So I would love to hear your stories, and I would love to have you with us next week. Paula, thank you so much for being with us today, and thank you for agreeing to be part of this little endeavor.
My pleasure.
Okay.
Okay.
And then, you know what? Here's another, you know, promise I would make to you and anyone listening. At some point, when we get to this point, we'll have some music. There'll be some music, and it will be musical music. And then that way, people will know that we are done with Women Are Not Funny. Goodbye.